Welcome to the DermVet Podcast. I'm Dr. Ashley Bourgeois, a board-certified veterinary dermatologist practicing in Portland, Oregon with animal dermatology clinics. I'm also a mom of two, just trying to find the balance like everyone else. Let's learn to ditch the itch, cytology, everything, and make derm more fun than frustrating. Cats who scratch their head and neck cause excoriations, crusting, hair loss. What are some of the differentials that you should have as you're evaluating these cases? Cats are really interesting, right? I mean, their allergies span so many different presentations. So very similar to how we discussed bald belly cats, I wanted to take some time and really dive into cats who show us facial excoriations or ulcerations. Because this is something that we can see as more common presentation for feline derm disease. So when I first see a cat with facial excoriations, ulcerations, hair loss, crusting, that's really seeming to target the head or neck, there's a few different things that I'm starting to consider with that specific pattern. We definitely want to rule out, as you know, I've talked about easy wins, especially in cats with skin disease, since they don't love to take a lot of medications long term. They don't necessarily want to see the veterinarian all the time if they don't have to. So they're the easy wins that we really want to make sure we think of are parasitic diseases, right? Like we all have the hesitation with the flea allergy talk or the parasite talk if we feel like there's going to be resistance from the client. And I have done previous podcast episodes about spiels and how to really approach that. And again, some of those cases were just not going to win. But just giving you guys some tips of how you can feel more confident about that discussion. And so you can check out the previous spiel podcast regarding that. But ultimately, we want to make sure we are not forgetting about the potential for parasites, because parasites tend to really like cats, even if they're indoor or they just lounge on the patio for an hour a day. So what are the different types of parasites we can see cause a lot of head and neck scratching? So what's often called feline scabies, Notoedris cati, is a parasite that we know, just like we see with canine scabies, can cause a lot of intense head and neck scratching. And especially if you have a situation where a household has multiple cats who are really intensely paretic to their head and their neck, we want to be considering Notoedris as a differential. Another one that actually as a dermatologist, I do not really see, but I know as general practitioners, you all probably see quite a bit, and that is Otodectes. So Otodectes tinnatus, or ear mites, right? If they have ear infections or a mite that's literally causing pruritus in their ears, they're going to scratch towards their head and neck a lot as the sensation from having that ear canal disease being affected. So we want to be considering things like if they're really scratching towards their head and necks, I always look in their ear canals, because intense infection in the ear canals or mites in the ear canals, head and neck scratching is a way that cats can really show us they're paritic to those areas. There's other things that aren't necessarily as common to just affect the head and neck, but we know it can cause a lot of pruritus, like Demodex gadoi. And what's really important to recognize about any of these, and then include flea allergy dermatitis in there, is that isoxazolines are really going to eliminate, hopefully, the possibility of this being present. So as we've talked about the isoxazolines before, besides it being really good flea prevention, we also get the additional benefit of ruling out these other ectoparasites. Notoedris, Otodectes, you know, Demodex, good flea control. We're helping to eliminate that as a cause of paritic facial dermatitis. So it is really important that we're having all of the cats in the household, including the cat that we're seeing or say the dog in that environment, that they're all on good isoxazoline control. Because if they are, then we know that we are really eliminating the suspicion that ectoparasitism could be causing the issue. And that is an easy win in cats. So yes, even if the other pet in the household is not itchy, and especially if they are itchy, everyone in the household really needs to be on that good control. Because if we can eliminate intense paritic facial dermatitis and excoriations, just by having good parasite control for everyone in the household, you are winning with cats. So that's something that's really, really important for us to recognize. So I feel like any podcast episode or lecture I do about cats, I mention the importance of isoxazolines, and that is just because I love easy wins in cats. And it's just amazing how many cats with some sort of parasite or sensitivity to parasites that come in our door, where I just wish I could like blanket isoxazoline on every dog and cat in our environment so we could just eliminate it as a concern. So very similar to bald-bellied cats, if you have a cat with facial excoriations, especially if it's very intensely paretic, and especially if other animals in the household are showing signs of itchiness, we definitely want everyone on an isoxazoline to rule that out. Now let's assume we have a cat that comes in, everyone is on a good isoxazoline, and there's still a decent amount of head and neck pruritus. So the other differential from a hypersensitivity standpoint that would be a bit higher on our list would be cutaneous adverse food reactions. So a food allergy can lead to head and neck pruritus associated with some sort of hypersensitivity. So there's a study actually done by Hobie et al. That, and I'll put this in the show notes, that actually shows a higher percentage of cats, if they specifically showed a distribution of head and neck pruritus, they were more likely to have food allergy compared to the other forms of allergies that we see. So, you know, potentially flea allergy, though again, we're assuming we've ruled that out because they're on good isoxazoline control, and then compared to something like feline atopic skin syndrome. That doesn't mean it can't happen with other hypersensitivities, but that particular study showed that a little bit of a higher percentage of cats, if they were head and neck pruritic and we think it's due to allergies, that they could have food allergy. So that was a multi-center study done in Europe, looking at many, many cats who have hypersensitivities. So if I have a cat come in, they're on good isoxazoline control, but they are really scratching a lot towards their head and neck still, then I really want to eliminate the possibility of a food allergy by doing an elimination diet trial. Also checking their ear canals just to make sure there's no otitis externa that's present as well, since we know that can cause a lot of issues as far as rubbing towards the head and the neck. So really make sure, based on, like I said, that paper from Europe, that we saw food allergy being significantly more frequent when the lesions were affecting the head and the neck, that we really, really consider the possibility of ear infections, a food allergy, and a pyoderma or malassezia dermatitis that could cause issues as well. Then, of course, we could still have a cat who has feline atopic skin syndrome. So if we have a cat who's scratching towards their head and their neck, we have them on a good isoxazoline, we haven't responded to a quality, remember quality, prescription diet trial, and we really feel like it's due to hypersensitivity, because we're going to talk about a couple other things that could still cause head and neck pruritus that's not a hypersensitivity, then we can come to the conclusion that it's feline atopic skin syndrome, and then we can address it with our symptomatic treatment, and then hopefully also considering something like allergy testing and desensitization long-term, because cats really can do quite well on immunotherapy, and a lot of them do not mind getting a shot every so often versus oral medications all the time. Now, what are other things that potentially could cause head and neck pruritus or lesions that are not allergies? And one of the primary things that we can potentially see is feline herpes virus. So we know that feline herpes virus can cause erosions, ulcerations around the face, around the conjunctiva, conjunctivitis, dorsal lateral muzzle, even the nasal plenum. And a lot of these cats will also have non-cutaneous signs. So rhinitis, keratoconjunctivitis, even uveitis in some cases, ulcerative stomatitis, lymphadenopathy, but they don't have to. And herpes virus is really difficult. You know, there's certain biopsies and diagnostic tests that can be run where you can look for things like inclusion bodies, but sometimes it can be just a clinical suspicion or kind of starting treatment to see how they respond. And that can be really, really hard, because I've had several cases, and one recently, where it was suspected to be herpes virus for a long time. So there was concern about utilizing something like, you know, immunosuppressive, rightfully so. But then by utilizing something like steroids and cyclosporin, the cat totally cleared up, and it was related to a hypersensitivity. So I know that you guys deal with herpes virus a decent amount and using different antivirals, but it really can be difficult, because head and neck scratching, you know, respiratory signs we can see with things like feline atopic skin syndrome, which is environmental allergies in cats. So these are things that can be quite difficult. And if you're seeing a cat who's not quite responding and you have the opportunity to really send them in for something like a dermatologist examination, that can be really beneficial because of the fact that these can be more difficult cases. And then we just have to go back and think about the things we know can cause itchiness or crusting in cats anyway, right? So dermatophytosis, certainly if cats are rubbing on each other with their heads, we can see kind of crusting, hair loss. Dermatophytosis on its own is not typically considered to be a paretic disease, but just like any dermatologic disease, secondary pyoderma can be very frequent. So they still can get to the point where they're really paretic and itchy. You don't have to have all cats in the household really affected to have a cat who's dealing with dermatophytosis. You can certainly have asymptomatic carriers in the household, even though owners often think, oh, if they have ringworm, then everyone in the house should have it and I should have it. But that's not always the case and not always something that we see. You know, then we get into just pyodermas related to other things, you know, other things like Demodex cati, which again, traditionally is not really an itchy disease, but can cause hair loss and can cause secondary pyoderma. So go back to the basics too of just thinking, yes, when we see head and neck, there's certain distributions we want to think about, but also what are just things that can cause hair loss and crustiness in cats in general, so that we can consider, you know, what other diagnostics we need to do or what types of treatments that we really need to consider. And then there are also like idiopathic autoimmune diseases that can cause ulcerations to the face as well. Those are more rare. They're usually pretty dramatic. You can biopsy those or refer those if you're suspecting you have something where they have huge ulceration on their face. It doesn't look like a typical, you know, just excoriation, but it's really refractory to traditional therapy and they're really getting large ulcers on their face. That is something that definitely a biopsy or really trying to get a referral can be really beneficial, because those are more rare cases, but something that can be quite traumatic. And then those can respond well to things sometimes like cyclosporin, but also topical tacrolimus. But can be something that can really affect how a pet looks and the types of infections that they get too. So as we start to really discuss, you know, different patterns in cats, a lot of these come down to very similar rule outs, right? Like depending on where you live, we want a cat on good isoxazoline because we just are ruling out all these parasites that can cause issues. And there's so many cats with excoriations, pruritus that are related to some sort of parasite. And then also just recognizing that they are on good ectoparasite control and they are scratching towards their head and the neck a bit more, then maybe we do prioritize a diet trial a bit more than we would in some other distributions that cats show us. And it's never wrong to do a diet trial because food allergies are sneaky. We certainly have plenty of cats who have multiple allergies. So unless you have a strictly seasonal cat, it's never wrong to do a diet trial, but especially if I'm seeing that pattern of kind of head and neck pruritus, they're on good isoxazoline control, it looks like a hypersensitivity, then I'd really be considering that. And then there's just picking up on the patterns of, yeah, they have facial excoriations and crusting, but it doesn't seem as typical as an allergy. So one other thing we didn't really dive into, and we don't see it typically just on the face, but pemphigus foliaceus is a crusted disease that we do know one of the target areas tends to be the pinna. So if you're seeing a lot of crusting on the pinna, that's tricky, right? Because they'll do better on steroids and we'll assume it's allergic. But actually, we know autoimmune diseases can respond to steroids as well. So those can be something that can actually be a little bit tricky to really differentiate. So if they have crusting just on their pinna, but not on the rest of their face, not in the canals, I would be thinking about something like pemphigus, especially if you do a cytology, you're not seeing much infection, but say you see a bunch of neutrophils. That would be a very bizarre presentation for allergies just to affect things like the pinna. So those are the types of things we think about. Like, yes, okay, we got crusting on the head, but it's really just the pinna. That seems weird for allergies. Or they're really going after, you know, their head, their face in general. They're not on any isoxazoline control. Maybe we control the pruritus symptomatically while we start that and kind of see the response from there. Okay, they've been on good isoxazoline for a few months and we can't really get off our symptomatic treatment. but it seems very typical for a hypersensitivity. We'll do a food trial next. So these are kind of the paths that we start to go on as we're evaluating these cats with certain distribution of lesions. And I hope that's something that you really find helpful. You know, feline dermatitis is something that can be difficult as far as working it up, cooperation with the pet, the limited treatment modalities that we have on label for them. But if you really start to put the pieces of the puzzle together, it can be really helpful and make it not as frustrating to deal with these cat cases. And we got to make sure we show our cats some loves too and give them the due diligence of an appropriate workup for their dermatologic disease.